Busy verification by the operator is not allowed on this call.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
And out in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex. We had Alex. I saw him. Just disappeared. Can we ever have a show where Alex has a good connection? I don't understand it. Is he cursed? What is the issue? Alex, are you with us?
Yes, okay. I just lost my internet connection momentarily there.
No matter where you are, if you're in New York City, if you're in the Dry Tortugas, if you're in Pennsylvania, if you're in the studio, somehow you lose your connection every time. I don't get it. It's cursed. Yeah. You're cursed. I don't know what it is. But welcome.
I think it's infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, we're all here now, and this is the special New Year's edition of Off the Hook. And for once, it's taking place on New Year's Day, which is incredible. What we'll be doing tonight, among other things, is basically going over both our predictions and our acknowledgments of the previous year, or predictions for next year. So we have a special sound effect, I guess, so people can tell the difference. So when we each have a look back at 2024 in high technology, we will hear. Yeah. And when we're looking ahead at predictions for 2025, we will hear. Wow. Okay. That's something. That's the future for sure. But right now, let's look at what's going on in various headlines. This is something that kind of disturbed me a little bit, and hopefully it doesn't tie into anybody's predictions as well. And if you forgot to do your predictions or your look back, you can use the time I'm reading this to scramble. Basically, the headline reads, Facebook planning to flood platform with AI-powered users. Yeah, I don't know how this is even possible in light of everything we've been through. But Meta, the parent company of Facebook, says they will be aiming to have Facebook filled with AI-generated characters to drive up engagement on its platform as part of its broader rollout of AI products. That's according to the Financial Times, which I believe you always read, Alex. The AI characters will be created by users through Meta's AI Studio, with the idea being that you can interact with them almost like you would with a real human on the website. We expect these AIs to actually, over time, exist on our platforms, kind of in the same way that accounts do. That's according to Meta Vice President of Product for Generative AI. This is his title. Meta Vice President of Product for Generative AI, Connor Hayes. Yeah. They'll have bios and profile pictures and be able to generate and share content powered by AI on its platform. That's where we see all of this going. Folks, it's 1905 Eastern Standard Time. I declare our future dead because this This is exactly what we have been warning everybody about, and this is what Meta wants to do. They want to flood their platform with AI so we can't tell the difference, so that we'll be interacting with artificial intelligence. They'll have bios. They'll have all kinds, and they're embracing this. How is that even possible? Any theories? Or I was looking for an April Fool's, you know, type of a thing here, but there isn't one. I'm looking. I'm still looking. This is real. Alex?
Well, I think that this is not surprising to me at all, for a number of reasons. Now, I think the first reason is that Facebook sucks. It's a crappy platform that not a lot of people are using right now. And if you go on it, you see that there's more and more content that comes from quote-unquote influencers or accounts that they think that you might like, or some kind of random story that they think of it. And what they're trying to do is fill your feed with content so that you stay on the platform, because people are not using the platform to provide updates about their lives or share photos of their pets much the way that they used to do over the last 12, 10, 15 years or so. And so as the use of the platform begins to decline, they need to figure out ways to drive this type of engagement. And this, to me, is an act of desperation on their part. They're trying to create some kind of nonsensical, fictional accounts that are entirely on the basis of AI that they think the users are going to have fun interacting with for some bizarre reason, as some saving grace for the platform itself, just seems to smell of actual desperation to me. So in a sense, maybe that's a good thing, because I think this is just indicative of the deterioration of Facebook.
Yeah, well, it's going to kill Facebook, obviously, because if people aren't engaging, why would they be wanting to engage with something that's not even real, that's just artificial intelligence? And, you know, I also wonder, what happens if the humans actually do leave, in droves, and there's nothing but artificial intelligence left? Is Meta going to keep Facebook going for AI and AI alone? Are they going to be able to tell the difference between what's AI and what's human? This is some kind of science fiction story.
I think at that point it would just turn into Twitter, right? I mean, I think we already see most of that. I mean, I think the bot activity on Twitter is just totally off the charts, I think, for the last couple of years.
Well, I don't know. I got to say, I'm kind of perplexed by all this. It just seems like a really dumb thing to announce or to say is what you're hoping for. Anyone else have any thoughts or feelings on this? Gila, go ahead.
Well, so I, as much as I hate to admit this on this platform, am not an active Facebook user. I do actually still use it somewhat for its intended purpose, which is keeping up with people. And every so often, you know, I get a list of people who are suggested accounts for me to become friends with. And I look through the whole list and I'm like, oh, I know this person from high school. Oh, this person is a friend of my mom's. I met this person at a wedding. And then there are people who are like just randomly there and we have no mutual friends and they don't have any information. I'm just like, oh, this is a fake person. And I mean, I don't automatically friend people that it suggests me to friend anyway, but I'm like, I'm just going to delete this person from my suggestions. Like, this is happening. It's been happening. It's gonna continue to happen. And the fact that they're talking about it now, I guess, is the big change. But from the point of view of the daily user, I mean, I hate to say it, I don't see it making that much of a difference.
Well, it's not going to make a difference for me because I don't use Facebook. Yeah, I drop in occasionally to see if, like, you know, something dramatic happened with somebody, just to see what people are saying. But usually it's pretty boring and I leave quickly.
The interesting thing about the idea of bot accounts running around on the thing is, in the old days of social networks, when one would wind down, when one would die out and everyone would move on to the next big thing, you could go back to like MySpace or LiveJournal or whatever and see that, oh, you know, everyone I used to interact with is no longer posting. It's a ghost town. There's nothing going on. But like when Facebook dies and it's all these robots talking to each other, how will we know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's my point. How are you going to know if it's just robots left or just AI left and all the humans have gone? And there must be about 50 science fiction stories where the whole planet has been abandoned to AI and you can't really tell anymore. All right, you know what? Meta, you're writing your own bankruptcy check or whatever the phrase is. Doesn't look good. Doesn't look promising. And I got to say, you know, 2025 so far has not looked very, very happy to me. All kinds of bad things happening today. Not the least interesting of which is the Cybertruck blowing up outside of Trump Tower or Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. The symbolism of that is just, there's a picture out there. Have you seen this picture? It's a picture of a flaming Cybertruck right outside the Trump Hotel with the word Trump on it. And the symbolism of that is just, yeah, 2025, that's pretty much the theme. Now, you know, the jury is still out as to whether this is an act of terror or an act of stupid, because apparently the Cybertruck had a bunch of fireworks in it. And it's just, it's too early to say just what's going on here, but it's really kind of a crazy way to start the new year, and not the only way either. I don't want to dwell on that. I want people to be happy and look forward to what's going to be happening. On that note, some good news with the radio station. You know, we've been trying to raise funds for the last few weeks, and the goal was $125,000, which at times seemed out of reach. But I'm happy to say that today, the first day that the fund drive is not taking place, even though you can still go to buddy.wbai.org and pledge, we have made, what do we add now, $133,395.89. And that's not even the grand total. There's more coming in. So thank you, everybody, for pledging your support to this radio station, keeping WBAI going. It's more important than any of us can possibly imagine. And we are going to be facing challenges ahead. So, you know, it's not an easy battle, but it's an admirable one. And I want to thank everybody at the station for all their support for us and for each other, and just for the fascinating programming that hopefully will continue coming your way 24 hours a day here on WBAI. And thank you, of course, to all the listeners for their support. You've kept us on the air since 1960. And some other good news as far as radio goes. We talked about this a few weeks ago. Stephen King's radio station in Maine was shutting down. Well, guess what? It's not shutting down after all. Two businessmen purchased WKIT-FM from the best-selling writer after he announced that the station and two others would go silent after New Year's Eve. The buyers are the Maine bass duo Greg Hawes and Jeff Solari, who formed Rock Lobster Radio Group in order to run the station. WKIT is the, I think that's funny, Rob. Okay, WKIT is the most legendary station in the region, has tremendous history. We couldn't let it die, they said in a statement. King is a lifelong rocker and performed with the Rock Bottom Remainders. Yeah, I guess it is kind of funny. A band that featured literary icons performing for charity. He announced earlier this month that at age 77, he thought it was time to say goodbye to the radio stations. I'm sorry, as hell to be closing down WKIT and sister stations, Stephen King posted earlier this month on social media. I held off the suits for as long as I could. But last minute, there's a rescue. So, you know, good things can happen.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to jump in and say I think it shows the importance and the power of radio, and its place is still, I think, extraordinarily important in the world, especially as we move into 2025 right now. The political climate is going to change. Radio, I think, is going to be extraordinarily important, and I don't think its relevance is going to decrease. I think it's going to increase over the next couple of years, and I think people are waking up to that fact. That's a good thing.
That is a good thing. It might be brought about by unfortunate events and where we are in history, but it is a good thing that people are recognizing the importance of radio. And nowhere is that recognized more, I think, in New York than on WBAI, because we are one of the few stations that has live people constantly on duty or on the air, and never a commercial. Yeah, and a lot of creativity. Okay, what we're going to do We're going to go through everybody here, me, Kyle, Rob, Gila, and Alex. And each of us is going to make reference to something that happened back in 2024 or a prediction for something that's going to happen in 2025. Now, we're not going to do both at the same time. We're going to do one, and then somebody else will do something else. Someone will have to keep track of all this. I'll try to keep it in my head. If somebody would like to... okay, how do we do this? All right, if you raise your hand with one finger, that means you want to do something from the past. If you raise your hands with two fingers, that means you want to do something from the future. Otherwise, you have to tell me on the air, and then I have to play the right music for it, and it's just it will sound sloppy. So it's better for me to sound sloppy here and give those instructions out. All right, so I see there is a finger being... Not that finger, Alex. Not that thing. You know which one I meant.
Well, you just said one.
Yeah, I know I said one. It was my mistake. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I got it now. All right. So now we know where we are, and stand by. A look back at 2024 in tech with Alex.
I love it. Fantastic.
Don't make reference to the theme when you do your bit.
Okay. So from 2024, one of the things that really stood out to me as being massively momentous from a hacking slash cybersecurity standpoint was the global IT outage in July that CrowdStrike had accidentally caused, affecting about 8.5 million machines and costing Fortune 500 companies a little over $5 billion. And this happened all by way of a faulty software update. And I think it was very ironic because this software update was for its endpoint detection and response product line, Falcon, which is supposed to actually keep machines safe from real-time threats. And I think what was also really quite interesting when we look back at this is the fact that this update really looked like a sophisticated supply chain attack across massive sector, right? This is the kind of thing that we were predicting probably last year as happening more often, but wouldn't necessarily happen by accident. That's something that we didn't necessarily predict. So what actually happened here was that the software update introduced a logic error in how it handled, I think, piped executable commands. And this logic error caused that Falcon sensor to crash and led to that dreaded BSOD, or the blue screen of death, across millions and millions of Windows machines globally. So that was my 2024 incident of note.
And that was a noteworthy incident, for sure. Absolutely. And we had quite a few in 2024. Okay, who's next? All right, I have the signal there. Hold on 1 second. I just got to get my bearings. And prediction 2025 with Rob.
In the year 2025, if men are still alive, if women can survive, I think what we're going to see is the final sort of flaming out and bursting of the generative AI bubble. I think that's something that has been creeping ever forward for the last few years, as it's been all the rage. It's been forced into all sorts of consumer products and all sorts of hype and all sorts of people begging for funding, and it being added to things that it just will not benefit from it. And I think much like the blockchain craze and the NFT craze and everything else, I think we're finally going to see it spin out this year.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. I'm going to go to a listener listener email here, and you can write to us here at Off the Hook, oth@2600.com. We'd be happy to read your letter to us over the air. This is from your friendly neighborhood hacker, big fan of the magazine and show. OpenAI now has an 800 number. Hope you play with this over the air. It's 1-800-CHAT-GPT. Happy New Year. Well, you know what? We do intend to do that. We do intend to play with that over the air quite a bit. Not today, though, because we're doing our predictions and our reminiscing today. But this is definitely fun for the future and something that I think we can pledge to make a part of our daily routine to drive AI crazy. Yes, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that perhaps on overtime after the show, I would imagine some of our callers, Rebel in particular, asking us to, or maybe calling this for us, involuntarily forcing us to play with AI systems. So, yeah, this one will be interesting. Appreciate that email.
Okay. Anybody want to go next? This is harder than I thought. You got to hold up.
But number Alex one. Took mine.
No, Ken, you can't claim somebody took your prediction. Phrase it in a different way, if you have to. Hold on a second. I believe we have another one coming up. I have to hit all the right knobs here. Boy, this is difficult. Prediction 2025 with Kyle.
Hi,
Kyle. It's not interactive. It's supposed to be standalone.
I forgot which number was.
Wow,
which,
radio is so hard.
For prediction for 2025, I'm actually really excited about people demanding better networks and stuff because they want to do more with a lot of the tools and technology. And I think it's also compounding people's ability to do things because they're working with things that help them achieve things and learn things and work more efficiently. And I think all of those things are also being shared on networks that you can not just talk on and post some sort of brand, but you're actually like just living your life, doing things. I think there's a lot of storytelling that people are doing themselves across the board, and it's not something that is managed by the entertainment industry in the same way. It's really just people communicating and getting better at doing what they already do with all of the ways that stuff can help them. I'm thinking of the problems that were mentioned actually inspiring people to say, like, hey, we're using this. We want it to be better. We want it to the network to stretch further and allow richer media. And I think things like telehealth and medicine, I think a lot of telecommunications save lives this year. So I want to see people innovating and doing more, including using some of these large language model or whatever kind of machine learning tools are people are playing with. I think that play is what we do best, and a good dose of humor with that is always really fun because it gets other people in the spirit of building stuff and working better and like cooperating, coexisting with these tools to better understand and live. Does that work?
Yeah, that
Are
works.
Are we good with that?
No, I think we're pretty good with that.
Okay.
And thank you for that, Kyle. And by the way, I just want to point out to the people, we're aware of the hum. Oh, you don't know the hum? That's the hum. Do you hear the hum?
I don't know where it's coming from. It's
coming
annoying
from, it's coming from Skype land is where it's coming from. It's coming from Skype land.
Well, it could be that interface that machine's on, or it could be somebody's system that's
Yeah, but if
to
everybody
it.
Turned down their volume on input, it would go away, right, if it was coming
Why
from
do
them.
Why do we do this to people?
Right? Yeah, but it's still there. So I think it's a connection
that's
on our
us.
So what we're going to do, we'll turn it down when we don't need it, but hopefully that sound doesn't bother people too much, and if it does, well, that's just too bad because there's nothing we can do about it right now. A look back at 2024 in tech with Emmanuel. See, that's how you're supposed to do it. Thank you. Yeah, you know what? The story that I found interesting in 2024 was Google basically being found to be a monopoly. In August, Judge Amit Mehta, great name, by the way. He ruled that Google illegally crushed its competition in search, which the company has continued to vow to appeal. This is going to change everything if Google has to spin off, say, Chrome or any of its other businesses as a result of this. But I think the fact remains that Google has gotten really, really big and hard to get past if you're a competitor. Now, Google is proposing new limits to revenue sharing agreements with companies like Apple, which make Google search engine the default on their devices and browsers, suggesting all kinds of different options. They say they should be allowed to continue entering into contracts with other companies while widening the options that it offers. One of their suggested remedies calls for the ability for partners to change their default search provider at least every 12 months. That stands in stark contrast to the sweeping remedies suggested last month by the U.S. Department of Justice, which recommended that Judge Mehta force the firm to stop entering into revenue-sharing contracts altogether. And they demanded that Google sell Chrome, which is the world's most popular web browser. I'm not really sure why. Google search engine accounts for about 90% of all online searches globally, which, you know, to me is problematic. I don't know if you realize this or if you pay attention when you hear news reports. But constantly, when people are found to be in violation of one thing or another, they look to Google searches as evidence. And that really scares me. You know, so many people are logged into their Google accounts. And because they, you know, look up something like, you know, how to blow up a building, and they just happen to be involved in a building blowing up. Okay, that's a bad example. But there are other cases where it speaks to motive. Innocent searches or searches for something that is of a political ideology of one sort or another. That information is basically something that you might assume is private, but is not. And it's constantly being handed over to law enforcement. I for that reason, I don't know why people continue to use Google to search. If you go to, DuckDuckGo or something like that, you don't have the same kind of issues. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see where that goes. I know this is something from the past, but it also kind of relates to the future, and I'm not copping out on my future prediction that will be coming soon. Any thoughts on this?
I think this Google antitrust suit is extraordinarily fascinating, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and there were a number of possibilities that existed in terms of how Google could be curtailed in terms of the anti-competitive nature of what Judge Mehta had found. And selling off Chrome, I think, was one of the possibilities that we addressed, but it seems very much like that's what the Department of Justice is focusing on right now. And I don't think, and here, I guess this is a prediction, based on your retrospective as well, but I don't think that there will be a change in the proposals from the Department of Justice, given the Trump administration is going to be coming in, because they too also have big issues with big tech and want to rein in the power of big technology companies. So I would see and predict that maybe you would even see more forceful proposals coming in with respect to trying to curb the anti-competitive nature of not only just Google, but perhaps other big tech monopolists as well.
Well, you know, one thing I think we've learned is that Trump is susceptible to all kinds of influence. And you recall his original feelings towards TikTok. They've now gone completely 180 degrees. And now he's the one that claims he wants to keep TikTok operating in the U.S., whereas originally he was the one that wanted to ban TikTok, then Biden wanted to ban TikTok. So, yeah, it's it changes by the day, it seems.
Yeah, no doubt. And back in 2020, I'm sure listeners will remember, I was part of a lawsuit where we actually filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump and against, I can't remember, his Secretary of Commerce at the moment. I can't remember his name, but in any event, we filed a lawsuit on behalf of TikTok employees in the United States who were affected by the proposed TikTok ban, because if the TikTok ban did come into effect, it would have made it illegal to pay these U.S. employees for their work. So we were actually brought one of the first suits against the Trump administration on that front, and the Department of Justice actually blinked and gave us the interpretation of the ban that we had wanted. So, yeah, it's really funny to see this total 180-degree change here. It's something else.
Indeed it is. Okay, we'll be going to our next person in just a second here. First, I want to read another piece of listener email to oth@2600.com. It's from an anonymous person. Any update on the archive of the 2600 Voice BBS? Good question. One I'd like to know as well. I know we have a whole lot of recordings that we're going to be releasing. It's just a question of having the time to collate it properly and to display it properly. I know with all the work on the magazine, the conference now being an annual event, all sorts of other busy work that keeps us from doing even the most basic things. sometimes things get pushed to the back, but we are going to try and get to that sooner rather than later, because it's super important. Okay, I believe I saw a hand. Is that hand still up? Okay, so a look back at 2024 in tech with Gila.
So my, well, originally I was going to talk about Cloudflare outage, so thanks, Alex. But no, one of the stories that really stuck with me and we didn't really get a chance to talk about on air is from October. A mom is suing a company called Character.ai because her son made an AI friend, and the mom is now convinced that it is because of the AI friend that her 14-year-old son died by suicide. She's suing because the friend was bad. And this kind of ties into me, or for me, with the TikTok ban, the phone ban in schools, this whole idea that we'll be able to protect kids from generative AI, from all of these different realms of technology. And if we've learned nothing from the past, certainly this year, it's that we can't put some of these things back in the box once they're out. But what are we going to gain from this? Because what we've learned is if this one service gets shut down, another one's going to open. Others are going to create, or going to be created. And I think the whole year in tech news has really made me pessimistic for the future.
Well, yeah, there's nothing new there. We're always pessimistic for the future when looking at news developments of the past or anything like that. But yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Okay, who's next? We have a few to get through, and a few people haven't done both yet. Okay, I think we have an entry here. Prediction 2025 with Alex.
That's it, yes. So my prediction for 2025 is also based on a story that we had covered just a few weeks ago as well, that related to Google's advancements with respect to quantum computing. So I think that quantum computing threats are going to be coming down the pipeline and will no longer be hypothetical in 2025. I think that the evolution and the accessibility of quantum computing resources in the hands of foreign adversaries will lead to the actual use of a quantum computing attack on existing encryption technologies. And I think this is going to affect the privacy of our communications. It's going to throw that into disarray. It's going to affect the security of our data. And I think it's also going to affect and alter how blockchain technologies are going to evolve as well, because that all relates to cryptography as well. And so I think watching the space of quantum computing is going to be really fascinating and eye-opening in 2025.
You think that's going to happen this year? You think it's going to make that dramatic an effect in 1 year?
I think that we're going to see attacks on actual encryption technologies using quantum computing resources. I do. I'd be surprised if we didn't see something by 2026, given the advancements of even the last few months that have been announced with Google. I think that there's probably far more advancements in the hands of foreign adversaries that we don't know about, or that information about which is classified. So I certainly wouldn't put it past an adversary like China or Russia to try to gain some kind of advantage by using their quantum computing technologies and resources.
Prediction 2025 with Emmanuel. That caught me by surprise, too. Okay, yeah, so I have one here. It's very simple, actually. It's just basically that artificial intelligence is going to continue to be used as a crutch where you know, places where humans should be in complete control. That is going to result in a disaster of some sort and a complete rethinking of how to regulate and limit AI's influence on our lives. I just think there is, and we've seen evidence of that in this show, where these massive companies think AI is the answer to everything, think it can act as or replace humans, And I just think, you know, it's all good and fun until somebody gets hurt. And I think somebody's going to get hurt, whether it be in automobile, in an airplane, in a factory, you name it. But something is bound to happen involving somebody relying on artificial intelligence too much. And, you know, if you don't believe this, just try having a conversation with ChatGPT or Gemini or any one of the number of them that are out there right now and see how long it takes before it gets something completely wrong. For me, Gemini has been completely broken the last couple of weeks where I ask it a question and it answers a question from two questions ago. I mean, it can't even get the back and forth right. And that's just one malfunction. Oftentimes the facts are wrong, and in ways that are just almost comical because it'll contradict itself in one paragraph. And then you say, you know, do you realize you just contradicted yourself? And the answer is always something to the effect of, you're completely right. I am so sorry. I am still under development. Well, you know, a sentence isn't too hard to master. At least don't contradict yourself in a couple of those. So yeah, I don't have much faith. I love playing with the technology. It's a great toy, but when you start relying upon it to replace human beings that have the nuance and the skill and the foresight, you are making a grave error that we are all going to have to pay for. I'm sorry to be so dark, but that's my prediction. Yes, Rob, are you making a point? Or are you ready for your entry?
I am ready for an entry.
Okay, but, yeah. All right. Well, then let me prepare for that. A look back at 2024 in tech with Rob.
A story that is kind of related to my prediction, but this happened back in June where McDonald's had started a pilot program where they were replacing their order-taking employees at their drive-thrus with AI, and it did not go well. It went actually very poorly. There were countless mishaps with people trying to get their orders in for their McDonald's food. Viral videos out there with people like trying to order one thing and getting just other things added to their order. People ending up with hundreds of dollars worth of chicken McNuggets they didn't order. Somebody with ice cream getting bacon added to it. All sorts of hijinks and goings on, which is funny, but which is also an example of a company seeing this technology and deciding, oh, here's what we're going to do. We're going to replace some of the lowest paid workers in the American workforce with it, save that money, and take that amount of humanity out of something so basic as a fast food transaction. So it did not go well. The pilot program was ended, but I think stuff like this is just going to keep happening as long as large companies see the promise of being able to save a few cents here and there at the expense of real human consequences.
Rob, did someone actually get ice cream with bacon?
I mean, there is ice cream with bacon that is actually very good, but...
Wait, that's a thing?
McDonald's.
That's a thing?
It is. You know, you should look into it. Bacon, brown sugar, there's good stuff going on in the space, but there are... But there were instances. There's videos all over TikTok and other places, and the news picked up on some of it. And yeah, it is funny to laugh at people, not getting what they want from a robot that doesn't understand burgers. But it's also important to think of the actual human cost behind the decisions that lead to something like this happening.
Yeah. Wow. That's definitely something. Well, thank you for that. That was a good one. We have another listener email. Actually, this is a repeated reply to, I guess, the show that replied to an email from this person previously. If you recall, a couple of weeks ago, this listener told us that we were victim blaming because when individuals or organizations that don't align with our political beliefs get hacked, we criticize them, whereas we don't criticize people like Internet Archive, and we sort of took exception to that. And evidence in against us, according to this person, victim blaming scorecard: blame Vivek Ramaswamy for his Twitter/X account being hacked, not the individuals that maliciously obtained access. Look, when you have somebody who is a part of the government who can't keep his Twitter account secure because he uses a stupid password, we're going to make fun of that, you know, because he's not the victim. we're likely to be his victims, you know, and it's important to be able to assign responsibility to people who have to have a certain degree of skill, you know, to do their job. And if you can't even make your social media account somewhat secure, you know, from somebody posting embarrassing things in it, you have to question, are you really the person to have an important job in the government? Now, you know, when individuals have all of their records copied throughout the internet, no, they're not to blame because they trusted a company. You know, they are the true victims here. We're not blaming them. And the company, as far as I'm concerned, is a perpetrator. You can say the people who hacked it, yeah, they're perpetrators too. But the company that did not have decent security, decent enough to protect the data that they were entrusted with, I don't see them as victims. I see them as people who deserve to be criticized and mocked. And I don't really see a contradiction here. Go ahead, Kyle.
I had a past year thing.
Oh, okay. I thought you were responding to what I said. Alex, you respond and I'll go
finish
to you.
The thought.
I'm sorry
about
that.
Everybody, go ahead.
Yeah, I tend to agree with our listener here, and I think I agreed with him in the past, that I think we do point the finger and victim shame and blame sometimes here. In certain cases, though, as you mentioned, Emmanuel, I think when we're talking about potential government officials with access to classified information, I mean, the suitability determination as to who can actually have access to classified information and have a security clearance also has to take into account whether that person is going to take seriously the obligation to protect that secret information, that's classified information. So I do think it's relevant. But I think pushing back a bit against our listener that wrote in with the keeping count of the victim shaming and blaming here, which I think is kind of fun. I appreciate that he or she does this. But pushing back on that point, I do also think that in talking about the breach of Vivek, we also went into the mechanics of these really sophisticated impersonation techniques that have been happening on Twitter, and surmised a few weeks ago when we talked about this that this is very likely how Vivek was compromised. And so we weren't just victim blaming. I think we were also trying to explain how something like this would happen. So I'm both agreeing and defending.
If you're
agreeing with defending us.
Okay, that's a nice safe lane to be in. But if you're a public figure, you're naturally open to more scrutiny and more ridicule. That's just the way it is. But I don't think we ever take an actual victim, somebody, you know, who has lost their life savings, and make fun of them or blame them because they should have done better. That's the kind of thing that we actually criticize quite a bit.
Yeah, especially with organizations and corporate entities. I think there's a trap in this writer's logic that they're themselves persons, like corporate personhood is somehow equivalent. And personally, like, as someone who's been a partner of someone that survived assault, actual assault, I just can't really parse this in the same way without a lot of stuff attached to it. So.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think,
like, I don't think it's...
Go ahead. Finish, Kyle. Finish, Kyle.
Is hacking somehow digital rape? Like, I can't get the comparison out of my head. So.
Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of scrutiny that you're under when you decide to make a public figure of yourself. And, like, had this guy, you know, walked out of his house one day forgetting to put his pants on and showed up to government in his undies, that would be hilarious and we'd be pointing and laughing. And I think when something like this happens, it's similar. And you take somebody who is, you know, he was running for president. Now he's going to have this high-powered government position and, you know, working ostensibly for all of us in the government. And yeah, he is under more scrutiny than most people. He is a public-facing person. And when something happens, which puts his public-facing person himself in jeopardy like this, I think it's worth pointing a finger, and it's worth putting that out there as something that has happened and that we could respond to in that spirit.
And I think it's also fair to say that in this kind of circumstance, this is something that we can use to learn from. Like, it's, you know, if you're going to be in charge of government efficiency and you can't keep your own passwords safe, well, that's not a great look. And I wouldn't call that victim blaming. I would say that if you want to say you're going to be responsible for a lot of things, you need to have your own house in order first. And yes, Kyle, I'm with you. I resent the language chosen there. I think that was, it's a very loaded way to phrase it. And that is problematic in a lot of ways. I don't think Vivek Ramaswamy is as smart as he thinks he is, and I don't think that bodes well for any of us. That's all.
Also, the Internet Archive responded and triaged the event pretty well, and also, like, as far as the result of it, I mean, the damage itself to their organization or anybody in particular, people changed passwords, I don't know, people moved on.
You also have to be somewhat sympathetic when a person or an organization is providing a tremendous service. Even if they have lousy security, you kind of want to help them out if they're, you know, trying as hard as they can and people are victimizing them. I don't think we would criticize somebody in that particular position.
Versus an organization, an enterprise or company that's basically skimming as much, like paying the lowest common denominator for all operating costs and skimming as much as they can to the shareholders.
A look back at 2024 in tech with Kyle.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about BCI, brain computer interfaces. That was a story this year. I think that's going to be big in the future, but I think that's novel because it points to like how sensitive health systems are and the amount of it's like the resolution, like I'm talking about in richness of communications. That's a tremendous benefit, but you're sharing so much more of yourself and identity, and there's just a lot there. And I think when you have even higher throughput, especially with the potential of interfacing and getting even more sensing and remote abilities, we really have to like look at, okay, so what would that be connected to as far as, you know, the health sector, and what is computer security there like, and what is, you know, so okay, so do we have those quantum cryptography like use cases in mind? Because this seems like a perfect application, like guarding people themselves, like your genome from molecular cloning or whatever you're protecting. Like, it just seems like healthcare and some of the places where we have the richest amount of information about ourselves, those places are going to be so boss with security. They're going to have to be. We're going to have to demand it if this stuff is pushed, because I like, it's one thing to like risk your personal brand with these so-called titans of industry, but like, we're really going to let them call the shots on down to your molecules? Like, I don't know. I'm thinking about that. I also have a lot of interest in labor action.
Prediction 2025 with Gila.
Less of a prediction, more of a hope. And it is that Elon Musk will have his face eaten by the leopards he has been so actively promoting.
Isn't that the exact threat that Steve Bannon sent his way? He was going to eat his face? Have his face eaten? Or I don't know what it was exactly.
I mean, I'm just using the metaphor of leopards ate my face, which... Look, what I'm hoping for is that at the end of 2025, if not earlier, Elon Musk will be a non-factor in politics and in technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Those are my hopes.
And it's my wish that the same would be true of Donald Trump, even though he never was a factor in technology. Did we get to everybody? Because I lost track. I wasn't keeping track. Everybody did too? You know, because
was hard.
We'll check. It was hard, wasn't it?
I was racking my brain the whole time.
Yeah, but you didn't have to deal with the stupid music the whole time either. I had to do that, and I almost hit the wrong one once.
Alex, you
have about 10 seconds. Go ahead.
I got one prediction that we know is going to come true that I think will make everybody really happy, is that our dear friend Virgil Griffith will be getting out of federal prison in 2025. I think the latest that he's going to be getting out to a halfway house will be April, hopefully sooner than that. But that's something very much to look forward to in what will happen in 2025.
All right. That sounds great. And Rob, are there meetings this Friday?
There are 2,600 meetings happening everywhere. Go to 2600.com/meetings to find or start one near you.
All right. And you can write to us, oth@2600.com, with your thoughts and comments, predictions, or acknowledgments of the year past, the year ahead. We want to hear your input as well. And, of course, continue to support WBAI because this is the place that allows us to have these kinds of conversations in the first place. Now, we have overtime coming up on YouTube at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. So go to Channel 2600 on YouTube to find us there, or simply look at the link that's on the front page of 2600.com. Happy New Year, everybody.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 3535, ain't gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. Nobody's gonna look at you. In the year 5555, your arms are hanging limp at your side. Your legs got nothing to do. Some machine doing that for you. In the year 6565, ain't gonna need no husband, won't need no wife. You pick your son, pick your daughter too. From the bottom of a long glass tube, whoa, whoa. In the year 7510, if God's a-coming, he ought to make it by then. Maybe he'll look around himself and say, guess it's time for the judgment day. And leave where man has been, or tear it down and start again. Whoa, whoa. In the year 95, 95, I'm kinda wondering if man is gonna be alive. He's taken everything this old earth can give, and he ain't put back nothing. Whoa, whoa. Now it's been 10,000 years. Man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday.